On March 21st, 2013, in Wise County, Texas, Deputy James Boyd was performing a routine traffic stop on a 1991 black Cadillac DeVille. What he didn't realize was that the person driving this vehicle was the notorious Evan Spencer Ebel, a member of a violent prison gang known as the 211 Crew. Evan was incorrectly released from prison just 2 months before this encounter due to an error in his court records. During his short taste of freedom, he obtained a 9mm pistol and killed a Domino's delivery driver named Nathan Leon, stealing his uniform in the process. Evan then wore that uniform as a disguise and rang the doorbell of Tom Clements, the executive director of the Colorado Department of Corrections. When Tom answered the door, he was shot directly in the chest and killed.
In the shocking overnight murder of the head of Colorado's prison system, Tom Clements was gunned down as he answered the front door of his Monument home last night. Air Tracker 7 was over the home this morning. Investigators are searching the area for clues and they are talking to neighbors.
2 days after this shooting brings us right back to this traffic stop on March 21st. And it seems that Evil Ebel would rather continue his murder spree than go back to prison. In this exact moment, Deputy Boyd was shot 3 times, twice in the chest and once in the head. Unfortunately, due to YouTube's sensitive graphic violence guidelines, we are unable to show this shooting on screen. However, Deputy Boyd recovered from his injuries and later described the experience.
I remember seeing the gun shoot off a number amount of times, and I could see the cartridges fly out, at which point I blacked out. I had no clue whether I was standing, sitting, laying, whatever.
While squirming on the ground in shock and agony, Deputy Boyd is spotted by a random civilian who pulls over to help. Backup is called in, and while Deputy Boyd gets some much-needed medical attention, numerous officers from several jurisdictions are quickly in hot pursuit of the shooter. The chase reaches speeds of over 100 miles per hour, and more shots are fired at law enforcement, all while weaving in and out of traffic. At one point, Evan blows a tire and smoke billows out from his vehicle, hindering the police cruiser's field of view. But the officer remains calm and stays right on Evan's tail. Eventually, Evan exits the highway, and the chase continues through the streets of Wise County. Then, out of nowhere, an 18-wheeler slams into Evan. His car is totaled, but the action isn't over yet. Evan immediately exits the vehicle and fires a barrage of bullets at the officers. The officers fire back, hitting Evan multiple times. Evan Ebel was killed instantly. Several significant pieces of evidence were found in Evan's Cadillac, including Nathan's Domino's uniform, directions to Tom Clements' house, a manifesto outlining his grievances with the prison system, and a hit list of other prison officials. This was an immediate red flag for authorities, as just 7 weeks earlier, another shooting took place with striking similarities. On January 31st, 2013, just 3 days after Evan Ebel was released from prison, a DA in Kaufman County was shot just outside of the courthouse.
Kaufman County 911.
Yes, sir. We've got a gentleman on Grove Street and Madison that just got shot.
Officer Jason Statsny was the first to arrive at the scene. He immediately began CPR.
He's got a shot in his face. There you go. There you go. There you go, buddy. Keep breathing for me.
5 minutes later, an ambulance arrived and an EMT took over.
Anybody know anything about it?
He's one of the DA prosecutors.
The victim was 57-year-old Mark Hassey, the chief assistant DA for Kaufman County. The scene was quickly secured, and Mark was loaded into the ambulance. Soon after being transported to the hospital, he tragically passed away. With the shooter at large, the courthouse was shut down for the day, and police began to canvass the area. Witnesses stated that the shooter was wearing all black with a covered face, and that they fled the scene by hopping into the passenger seat of a getaway car, a silver or light-colored four-door sedan. Another witness claimed to have heard Mark's final words. "No, no, I'm sorry," right before he was shot. Investigators had a feeling that one of the criminals Mark prosecuted sought revenge through a targeted killing, and Mark's final words only supported this theory. While they worked to verify this hunch, District Attorney Mike McClelland made a public statement where he addressed the shooter directly.
My name's Mike McClelland. I'm the criminal district attorney for Kaufman County. We lost a really, really good man. I hope that the people that did this are watching, because we're very confident that we're going to find you, we're going to pull you out of whatever hole you're in, and we're going to bring you back and let the people of Kaufman County prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law.
2 months later, when Evan Ebel's murder spree ended with his death, Mike and Kaufman authorities wondered if they could link Evan's 211 crew affiliation and hit list to Mark's murder as well. Unfortunately, Mike wouldn't live long enough to find out, as he became the next victim.
District Attorney Mike McClellan and his wife Cynthia have been found shot to death.
It is the second shooting of a prosecutor in the small Texas town this year, coming just 2 months after Assistant District Attorney Mark Hassey was shot dead outside the local courthouse on his way to work.
On March 30th, 2013, friends and family were unable to get in touch with District Attorney Mike McClellan and his wife Cynthia. When they went to check on them, the door was unlocked. Inside, they immediately noticed shell casings at their feet. They feared the worst, and after moving toward the living room, Cynthia was found lying motionless in a pool of blood. Further into the house, they discovered Mike's body as well, riddled with bullets. The McClellans had been brutally murdered. Authorities rushed to the scene and spent the night processing it. It was discovered that the McClellans had a home security system that kept track of any movement detected in the house. All movement stopped by 6:42 a.m. that morning, indicating that the shooting must have taken place around this time. News quickly spread of the McClellan murders, and while hundreds of investigators got to work, a multitude of tips poured in from the public. But one of these tips was much different than the others. It came in on the night of Easter Sunday, and it simply read,
"Do we have your full attention now? Only a response from Judge Bruce Woods will be answered. You have 48 hours.
Law enforcement decided to respond.
"You have our attention. How can the county judge contact you?"
Since the Crime Stoppers program protects the anonymity of those sending tips, law enforcement had no choice but to await a response from this mysterious tipster. 12 hours later, that response came. It started with,
"Your act of good faith will result in no other attacks this weekend."
This mysterious person went on to prove that they were in fact the killer, by stating the kind of ammunition used to murder Mike Hassey, something only law enforcement and the killer would know. Then, the killer had a very specific demand.
"Judge Woods must offer a resignation of one of the four main judges in Kaufman. My superiors will see this as a first step, ending our action. Do not report any details of this arrangement. You have until Friday at 4 p.m. We are not unreasonable, but we will not be stopped."
Law enforcement then responded yet again.
"We are working on your demands. A lot has been put out to the media. Can you give us additional details that are specific to this case and not known by the press?"
Unfortunately, the conversation ended there, leaving law enforcement wondering if these were threats coming from Evan Ebel's fellow gang members.
Ebel was a member of the white supremacist prison gang called the 211 Crew. In recent years, experts say ultra-violent white supremacist prison gangs like the 211 Crew and the much larger Aryan Brotherhood, the subject of this National Geographic investigation, have expanded their criminal enterprises outside the prison walls, selling drugs and running guns, all directed from behind bars.
They devised all kinds of codes, so they might send out a letter that looks like a quite benign letter, but is actually directing a hit or some other kind of criminal activity.
Still, experts say it is extremely rare for prison gangs to kill top officials, because to do so means all-out war. Tonight, war may well be what the 211 Crew has on its hands.
With the possibility of more organized gang violence on the way, detectives were in overdrive, searching for anything or anyone to help identify Mike and Cynthia's shooter. While reviewing surveillance footage from businesses around the McClellan household, a white Ford Crown Victoria can be seen speeding through the streets. Meanwhile, another team of investigators were taking a look through the past cases involving both Mike McClellan and Mark Hassey. From these case files, a new suspect emerged, former Justice of the Peace and Mensa member, Eric Williams. In 2011, Eric was arrested and charged with felony theft. This Mensa-certified genius seemed to have forgotten that there were cameras in the courthouse when he stole 3 computers. Following his arrest, he was brought to the interrogation room for questioning.
Okay, before we get started, I'm Ray Moran. You're an attorney, you're a judge, so you know this. What does that mean?
I'm Ray. Okay. It's been an ongoing kind of thing where I tell the IT people that I need to keep improving things.
I understand, but you hadn't put any kind of written request, nothing like that's been documented on.
No, nothing like that.
I don't think that you actually believe, I mean, you're an educated person. Mm-hmm. I see you class ring on your finger, that you can just walk into an ID department and say, "I need a monitor, I'm taking that one." I mean,
there's places that do that.
Places being here in Kaufman County or
Well, I mean, there's businesses that quit.
Eric was offered a plea deal, which would reduce the charges from a felony to a misdemeanor. But he refused this offer, and the case was sent to trial. The prosecution team consisted of Mark Hassey and Mike McClelland. Eric was ultimately found guilty. He was only sentenced to 2 years probation, but what really stung was that he was now a convicted felon. As a result, his position as Justice of the Peace and his law license were revoked. Following Mark and Mike's death in 2013, Eric was asked to take part in a police interview. He refused to speak with the investigators following the advice of his attorneys. However, Eric had no problem speaking with the media, giving his 2 cents throughout the investigation.
First, I want to say that my deepest condolences go out to the McClellan family and all the people at the courthouse, most of which I know. I cooperated with law enforcement. I certainly wish them the best in bringing justice for this incredibly egregious act.
Has anyone connected with this investigation suggested to you that you are a person of interest in the investigation?
No.
Did you bear either of those men any kind of grudge?
No, absolutely not.
My heartfelt condolences go out to both the McClellan family and the Hassey family because they were in public office doing the right thing and for some reason that we're not aware of have paid the ultimate price for that.
While Eric segued between several media outlets, investigators continued to look into him as the prime suspect. To their surprise, Eric had no record of ever owning a white Crown Victoria. Thankfully, on April 11th, 12 days after the McClelland murders, Eric fired his attorneys and reached out to the authorities to cooperate. Detectives immediately headed to Eric's residence to interview him.
Hey, Eric, I appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much.
And you understand why your name pops up in
absolutely.
All this. Well, did you have anything to do with it?
No, absolutely not.
As expected, Eric insisted that he had zero involvement regarding the murders, so the detectives decided to take a different angle.
You don't have any more? You got rid of all of them?
I have one gun I'm trying to sell, and it's just hard as hell to sell.
Hey, just curious, how many guns did you used to own?
About 16.
And you sold 15 of them?
For context, since Eric is a convicted felon, it is illegal for him to own any firearms.
I'd love to go back and say, there's no guns in your house. We looked in the house.
I guess we could just look in there real quick.
Without probable cause, the detectives are unable to legally search Eric's home, unless he grants them permission himself.
But you don't mind us going out there and looking? Okay,
I'll take that.
With permission now granted, the detectives begin their search, audio still rolling.
Do you still have any ammo or anything?
Last year, the only ammo I would have would be for that movie.
As Eric stated earlier, he had apparently sold all but one of his 16 firearms. But as they move from room to room, they uncover a host of weapon attachments.
Hey, Eric, I'm just curious. You're selling all your guns. Why didn't you say you're spotting and stuff?
You got to do everything
yet,
yeah.
Here, what is that?
The taser they just discovered is actually a thermal sensor, otherwise known as a heat seeker, which can be used for night vision. Since the McClellans were believed to have been killed before sunrise, the detectives used this, along with the suspicious amount of firearm attachments, as probable cause for a proper search warrant. The next day, on April 12, 2013, the search is in full swing, with Kaufman County investigators and the FBI working together. During this search, they find even more than they were hoping for. In a filing cabinet in the garage, they found the vehicle registration for a white Ford Crown Victoria. They also found a scrap piece of paper. Written on it was an anonymous tip website and a password. When the police gained access to this account, they confirmed that Eric was the one taunting and extorting law enforcement.
We are not unreasonable, but we will not be stopped.
Authorities have arrested 46-year-old Eric Williams. He's charged with making a terroristic threat after searching his home. Williams is the former Justice of the Peace in Kaufman County, a position he lost last year when the DA's office convicted him of theft. He has not been named a suspect in the murders.
As the investigation honed in on Eric, several more tips came in, including one from a man named Roger. Roger and Eric became friends during their time in the Texas State Guard, and in November of 2012, Eric convinced Roger to rent a storage unit for him. Once Roger heard about the search of Eric's home, he immediately reached out to law enforcement and told them about this unit. On April 13th, 2013, police executed a search of this unit, and to say they hit the jackpot would be an understatement. Not only did they find the white Crown Victoria, but they also unveiled police uniforms and badges, bulletproof vests, and an arsenal of weaponry, including knives, a crossbow, multiple guns, and ammunition that could have killed both Mark Hassey and the McClellans. And of course, pickle jars filled with homemade napalm. Several firearms were sent in for forensic testing, along with a stray bullet which was found in a random bag away from all of the other ammunition. As for the silver sedan, police were eventually able to locate receipts for a silver Mercury Sable, which had been towed away after sitting in the storage facility's parking lot for too long. The test results came back, and after comparing the bullet with the shell casings at the murder scene, they were able to confirm that the bullet was ejected from the same weapon that killed the McClellans. However, they were unable to confirm if the firearms that they tested were used in any of the murders. Although this was very frustrating, prosecutors ultimately decided to move forward. On April 18, 2013, Eric Williams was charged with 3 counts of capital murder. In capital murder cases, the state divides the trial into 2 phases, the guilt phase and the penalty phase. During the guilt phase, a jury decides the defendant's guilt or innocence. If the defendant is found guilty, the trial moves to a penalty phase, in which the jury receives additional information and decides whether or not the defendant should be executed. The guilt phase began in December of 2014 and was only addressing 1 of the 3 charges, the murder of Cynthia McClelland. This was devised by the prosecution team so that if anything went wrong in the first trial, they could essentially get a second chance through another trial. Prosecutors summarized the investigation for the jury, portraying Eric as an egotistical and calculated killer who would go to great lengths for revenge.
This is my chance to tell you the story of the murders of Mike and Cynthia McClelland. He sent an email into law enforcement claiming credit for the murders, thinking law enforcement would never figure it out. Well, he was wrong.
They also used the storage facility's surveillance footage to establish a timeline of the crime. At about 6 a.m., the Crown Victoria can be seen entering the parking lot, then leaving 12 minutes later at around 6:12 a.m. Then, after killing the McClellans at around 6:42 a.m., the vehicle heads back to the storage unit, arriving at 7 a.m. 17 minutes later, a black SUV can be seen leaving the area. The defense, on the other hand, focused on the weak points in the prosecution's case.
Eric Williams did not commit these murders. There is no known murder weapon in this case. There's no one who can place Eric Williams in that scene at the McClellan home. No one.
The prosecution called an onslaught of witnesses, meticulously breaking down each and every piece of evidence and testimony. As for the defense, they called no witnesses during the guilt phase of the trial. They simply believed that it was unnecessary since the state failed to prove Eric's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. However, the final say would go to the jury, and after 90 minutes of deliberation, a verdict was reached.
We, the jury, unanimously find the defendant, Eric Lyle Williams, guilty of capital murder as charged in the indictment.
Eric Williams was found guilty for the murder of Cynthia McClelland. It was now time for the penalty phase, where the jury decides whether or not Eric will receive the death penalty. Perhaps the most compelling moment of the trial is what happened next. This is Kim Williams, Eric's wife and alleged getaway driver. Back in 2013, Kim was arrested at the same time as Eric, and detectives spoke with her for hours in the interrogation room. Although she was first defensive about her husband, she slowly let her guard down and eventually told the detectives what really happened. They convinced her to take a plea deal. Since she was protected by spousal immunity, she was not forced to testify against Eric. However, as part of her deal, they asked that she provide testimony during the penalty phase of the trial. She agreed.
It was a cold day, and there was excitement in the air. He came up with a plan to dress like law enforcement. He was modeling it for me.
Describe to the members of the jury what he was modeling for you the night before.
I want to say he looked like he was in the Army. Or SWAT. He had a bulletproof vest that had sheriff on the front. That more than likely, Mrs. McClellan was going to answer the door and he was going to introduce himself as a policeman.
You may be wondering why Cynthia had to die if Mike was the target. Kim explained Eric's simple reasoning to the court.
She would be there as a witness, and he described it as collateral damage.
What did he tell you about how Cynthia McClellan died?
He told me that he had to shoot her an extra time because she was still moaning.
That night, Kim and Eric celebrated the double murder by having a feast.
We had steaks on the grill, and Eric cooked those.
At your parents' house?
At my parents' house.
Were you all celebrating the steaks?
That's correct.
During the guilt phase of the trial, the prosecution team was not allowed to bring up the details of the Marcassi case, so they used this opportunity to bring the jury up to speed.
Did you agree to drive?
Yes, I did.
You knew what was going to happen?
Yes, I did.
Why did you agree to drive for the murder of Marcassi?
I was so drugged up, and I so believed in Eric and everything that he told me. His anger was my anger.
Kim went on to recount the moments following Mark's shooting.
As you're driving away from the scene of the Hassi murder, what is his mood like?
Happy.
What is your mood like?
Happy.
She also recalled driving to a bridge one night with Eric, where he threw a bag into the lake below.
Do you know what was in the bag?
I knew that it was guns.
After 7 months of searching, the bag was found at the bottom of the lake. It turns out that it wasn't a bag at all, but rather a Halloween mask that Eric wore during Mark's shooting in order to conceal his face. Inside the mask was two revolvers, one of which was confirmed to have killed Mark.
And you can imagine the terror that was going through Mark Hassett when he recognized and heard the voice.
Kim also revealed that Eric had several more victims in mind. This hit list included a judge that he planned on killing in a more creative way than the others.
And who else?
Judge Ashworth.
How did he tell you he was going to kill Judge Ashworth?
He was going to shoot him with a crossbow.
What was the napalm for?
I guess to drive in an extra kind of FU. He's going to bore a hole in his stomach and pour it in.
The defense tried to combat this disturbing testimony with a small army of character witnesses. No matter how hard the defense worked, Eric's fate was ultimately left to the jury, and on December 17, 2014, Eric Williams was sentenced to death by lethal injection.
He was ordered by this court to carry out the sentence of death.
As of November 2024, Eric is still on death row and is appealing his conviction. Kim Williams pled guilty to the murder of Mark Hassi and was sentenced to 40 years in prison.
Pretty much the only thing I have to say is, F*** you, Eric Williams.